This episode was recorded in front of a live audience on August 29th, 2019. From Burrow and Block, welcome to It Makes You Think, a show that explores the crossroads of learning and design. I'm Chris Eisenga, and I'm the co-founder of Burrow and Block, a human-centered design studio focused on products and tools for learning programs and education. Every show, we'll interview thought leaders in these fields and ask them about their work, its impact, and how they're getting wiser. Our guest this episode is Zach Neese, director of the Techstars Sustainability Accelerator, in partnership with the Nature Conservancy. In 2006, four founders, including now Governor Jared Polis of Colorado, launched an accelerator program for startups from their space in Boulder. In addition to initial capital investment, the four also invested time and expertise to mentor startup founders for a three-month accelerator program. Now in its 13th year, Techstars has a reach that extends from Boulder to across the globe, helping to launch businesses such as SendGrid, PillPack, and Sphero. Helping Techstars entrepreneurs get started is Zach Neese. Zach is the former Vice President of Education at Techstars and is now the Managing Director of Techstars Sustainability Accelerator in partnership with the Nature Conservancy. I hope you're as excited to hear from him tonight as I am. Please give a warm welcome to Zach Neese.
Hey, Zach. Thanks, thanks again.
Absolutely.
First question, how are you?
Doing well.
Great. So good to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Do you mind telling everybody a little bit about what you've been doing at Techstars recently?
Yeah. My history with Techstars goes back to 2008, the second Boulder class, where I was part of the crew mentoring the companies. Been affiliated with Techstars since then. And then 4 years ago, became part of Techstars on the investment side as part of the Boulder program, accelerator program. Had a little stint in the education group there, and then now back with my investor hat on, working with our sustainability program.
Tell us a little bit more about the sustainability program.
Yeah, it's a really neat program. So we run about 50 programs around the world, accelerator programs, and ours is the first one in partnership with a nonprofit, the Nature Conservancy. So they're one of the largest land trust conservation non-governmental organizations, nonprofits in the world. And it's a really unique partnership where we are bringing in venture scale businesses that an intrinsic part of their business is impact on the planet. And what we're really looking at is companies that are aligned with the major strategic themes of the Nature Conservancy. And all these businesses are for profit. We think that they can hit venture scale. And the cool thing is as they hit venture scale, their impact model also is going to hit a high degree of scale. And we believe that when you combine those two together, you can really have an impact on the world. One of the comments from the Nature Conservancy is, because they're really known for their land grants and conservation financial instruments. And so the joke is that nature needs a banker. And so what we think about what we're doing is we're also giving nature an entrepreneur.
That is fascinating to think of it in those terms. How closely are you working with some of these groups that are coming in?
Yeah,
like, are you hand in hand with them?
Or? Yeah, we bring 10 companies in per year. Our program is 14 weeks long, and yeah, I'm working with them every day, very intensively. That's a unique part of our programs; they're very intensive. We create a bespoke experience for each company that's tuned specifically to that company. We wrap them with amazing mentors, and we provide educational content and other experiences to them. But that's why we only do 10, we don't do 100, is because we're trying to do very specific things with each company.
You mentioned something about the mentorship, and I know that is the special sauce for Techstars. How do you prepare mentors to guide and support these startups?
Yeah, so part of it, I mean, there's a big selection bias in everything that we're doing. So we pick mentors because they have direct experience building companies. We look for, one of our core values is give first. We have it written basically on every building that we have, every place we run an accelerator. And we're looking for people who are willing and want to give before they think about getting. And the idea here is with give first is that you do something good for someone, you put energy into the system. It's not pure altruism because you do expect at some point something back, but there is a disconnect between your giving and the receiving you'll eventually get. And that creates an environment where it doesn't feel very transactional. We don't like people in our environment where they're doing something to get something directly back. We want to do it for sort of the love of the game. So that's a big part of preparing. And then as we bring new mentors in, we do an orientation around certain kind of heuristics that work well. Mm-hmm. We also obviously point them to Brad Feld's Mentor Manifesto, mm-hmm. which is he and David Cohen created this list of behaviors that are supportive of a good mentorship experience.
How have you seen mentorship change over time?
I mean, I think at the base of it is it stayed pretty consistent and common, which is this drive of, I remember when I was trying to do these things and it was brutally hard and mm-hmm. I wish I could turn to somebody.
Right.
And somehow I figured it out and now I want to give back to the next group and help them through the stuff that I wish somebody would have been there for me to help. You know, I think in you know, as technology has gotten more prevalent and basically the canon of information is available to pretty much anybody, mm-hmm. you can Google anything, the element of wisdom and lived experience becomes really important. So, you know, when you can look everything up, it's that filter of, yeah, but I've lived through this and this is, you know, this is how I feel in this moment. Like my body's telling me that I think you should go this way with mm-hmm. this idea. I don't know exactly why and I don't have any facts to support it. And so it's that embodied wisdom becomes really, really important.
What is the bar? Like that you got to get above this in order to play in this particular field with the Techstars groups.
Yeah, I mean, certainly for Techstars, what we look for is somebody who's been, we divide our mentors up into a couple of different categories. Mm-hmm. We have lead mentors there. We ask them to dedicate at least an hour of a week in program to help out with the companies. We've got functional mentors. They're tend to be very knowledgeable in a very specific kind of knowledge base mm-hmm. that can be helpful across a bunch of different companies. But the thing that we really look for is lived experience. Mm-hmm. We want to bring people in who literally have been in the same seats that our entrepreneurs are in, with, obviously with different businesses.
Right.
But they know what it's like to try to make payroll. They know what mm-hmm. it's like to stuff to go wrong. And you look around, you're like, there's just four of us here. And I guess one of us has to figure this out.
It's us, right? There's nobody right. else that's going to do this.
And for the CEOs, when we think about mentorship around the CEOs, CEOs have been there and like, who know what it's like, the loneliness, the isolation of knowing the entire company sits on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And you can't go to necessarily your co-founder sometimes and be like, hey, I'm done. I want out. And to give that mentorship to people who know what it's like to be in that position, somebody to talk to. And we also look for mentors that are one step ahead mm-hmm. or maybe on their next business. We also have mentors that are four or five steps ahead that have built huge scalable businesses. And so we try to find that combination. And with our companies, we surround them with kind of three to six of those lead mentors. Mm-hmm. And so you get the diversity of viewpoint also into the mix. And part of that is the check against the, like, are you sure you should be a mentor? Which is one of the things we say, it's your company as an entrepreneur. Do what makes sense for you.
Right.
And we'll try to create an environment where you're getting potentially opposing viewpoints and mm-hmm. kind of that tug of mm-hmm. this way or that way. That way you can build a diversity of mindset and background, and again, as input into the entrepreneur making their decision.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Nature Conservancy. Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that this type of business model that really does look at that triple bottom line, you know, how profitable are we? Are we taking care of our people, but are we also taking care of the planet? Mm-hmm. It's... In the history of humanity, it's a fairly recent evolution. Are you finding, though, that you have a lot of mentor kind of pools to pull from, or not so much? Because this is a different game you're playing.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the entrepreneurs that we bring in, what I've noticed is they tend to be more purpose-driven. They have a fire in their belly that isn't just about making money or proving something about their worth as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. The fire that's in their belly is to fundamentally change something about business and fundamentally change something positively for the planet. And I really love working with purpose-driven people. So for me, it's a great experience. And you know, the other element of it too with the Nature Conservancy is bringing in their scientists, their subject matter experts. Mm. And so that's another element of the mentorship that's unique about our program. Our vertical programs do that, where they'll mm-hmm. bring people in with our, you know, from our partner organizations to help the entrepreneurs. But here, we have the ability to bring in scientists that, you know, we had one scientist come in, and one of the entrepreneurs just like huge buggy eyes, like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to, you know, work with this person and talk with them about this, you know, super geeky, you know, carbon transfer, you know, science. Yeah, from a mentorship standpoint, no, I've been super impressed and feel really blessed with the mentors that we've been able to bring into our program and you know, surround our entrepreneurs.
So how do you see this going? When you step back from the work that you're doing every single day and you just kind of look at it a little more holistically, how do you see this balance of economics and conservation going? Are we getting better at this? Is there a reason for optimism? I mean, everyone's been talking about Greenland melting, and it's very concerning. It's a canary in the coal mine.
Yep.
But from your perspective, when you look to see how business is approaching this critical issue that we're facing, how are you seeing this from where you stand?
And there's two kind of lenses that I view it through. There's the human change in human behavior. And then there's the geometric nature of technology, or the exponential impact technology can have. And you know, human change is always going to be a hard thing. And then if you think about bringing on technologies where you can do, you know, if we think back 10 years ago and think about the technology that was available to us and the dramatic change and all of the amazing things that are available to us in just a short 10 years. What would it mean to empower nature with that same exponential curve of advancement in technology? So when I, you know, think about the, and as a team, as we think about the entrepreneurs that we're bringing in, one of the things that really delights me is looking for companies where they're leveraging that exponential curve that technology enables in a way that as their business is succeeding, that technology can be applied in ecological services and kind of give a booster pack to what nature's really great at doing anyway.
Right.
How can we augment that? How can we put it on the similar acceleration curve that we're sort of used to as we're playing with hardware and software and technology in our lives?
Yeah. You and I both taught in higher ed before. What do we need to be teaching the students that are in college? They're sophomores, they're juniors, they want to be entrepreneurs. I've worked with several of them myself, and it's always really interesting to kind of see like what they think they know, and then but there's like that. I mean, there's no teacher quite like experience, right?
Yep.
But what do colleges and universities need to be teaching now to kind of like help bridge that moment of receiving the degree to a kind of program like what you're doing?
To me, the biggest thing, and just for context, I teach in an engineering context. I teach entrepreneurship into the engineering college at CU Boulder, specifically the computer science department. So I'm basically teaching future programmers how to, you know, bring entrepreneurship into their world. To me, the biggest fundamental thing, and it's almost an unteaching, and I think this is a little bit unique in engineering, which is one of the professors at CU did a study that showed that by the time an undergraduate graduates with an engineering degree, they've played the following game about 3,000 times, which is a person of authority stands in front of the student, gives the problem, and said, your grade depends on finding the one known solution to this problem. And for a lot of parts of engineering, that's totally appropriate. When you start blending in entrepreneurship and you think about solving wicked problems, problems where there is no known solution, what it becomes about is asking the right questions. But to me, the first thing I try to teach undergraduates, and we also have graduate students, PhD candidates in our class, is it's about the questions you're asking. It's about gaining empathy for the people who potentially could use your technology and understanding what it's like for them to embrace this technology. How's it going to change them? What are the underlying needs and desires and problems? And so it's not about figuring out, okay, there's the game is the one solution. The game is what's the right question? What's the right problem to focus in on and build the technology in service of that problem? And I find that almost kind of younger in school, that becomes an easier endeavor because by the time you're a senior or you've graduated, you've been really well trained to figure out the one known solution.
It's hard to unlearn all of that.
And that's the one thing I really focus on.
Where do you see then the most opportunity for entrepreneurs to grow as leaders and doers?
I think from a leadership standpoint, one of the things that I've been fascinated with for a while is as a leader, how do you create the space for innovation, for just what I was talking about. Because it's, you know, we've got a lot of models for, as a leader, how to create a space for a team to come together and find the one solution. It's a lot harder to create the space for people to explore a problem domain where there maybe isn't a solution just yet. And that living with that tension, that ambiguity, how do you create a space where people's gifts come out and commingle with other people's gifts? And to get that a team where they're functioning really, really well and are able to solve a problem nobody thought was possible to solve. I think from a leadership standpoint, that's a critical skill that we don't often learn in the manufacturing-centric education system.
Yeah. A lot of what you're saying here is really resonating with me as well. You taught engineering, in particular computer science. I taught a lot of marketing, communications, public relations, and social change communication especially. And even in a field that vague, realizing that, you know, there's degrees of rightness. But to help them try to understand, it's just like, no, you actually don't understand your audience well enough. You don't understand the very people that you're trying to help anywhere near as much as you think that you do. Just because you've lived this one experience and it's somewhat similar to what they're contending with, it's still apples to oranges,
right?
And there is so much unlearning that has to go into this.
Yep.
So first time I tell them, you know, I don't do tests in this class. Well, how the heck am I graded? And I mean,
it's always a question we would get is like, what's the grade?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, here's the high level, you know, rubric. It's 30% this, 40% this, and a little bit of that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they look like, well, how do I know where I'm at? I'm like, where's your business going? Because we actually have them take ideas and turn them into businesses. And we have a huge celebration in class when they, what we call turning pro, when they've actually made money with their business. And we tell them, yeah, you get to keep the money you make. But it's that structure that they're accustomed to. And I intentionally, and I think it drives some of the students crazy, and I tell them right at the very beginning is, this will be a very unstructured class from a grading standpoint, from a class mechanic standpoint.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I do that is I want them to get comfortable with the ambiguity of being an entrepreneur.
Yes.
There is no structure. There's no known direction that you're going. What does it feel like to navigate through that? And some of the students thrive on it. They love it. It's like, oh, finally, no structure. And some of them have no idea what to do.
Yeah, they just shut down.
Yep.
Some of them
do. And so we help them through that.
Right.
But I don't help them through it by giving more structure. I help them through it by helping them feel comfortable with the ambiguity.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting in that sometimes the constraints that are present, some of them feel, you know, totally boxed in by all of this, and others it's just like a warm blanket for them. But to be able to throw them those curveballs as they're learning and developing and being like, you're learning all of this stuff, but at the same time there should be like this common thread of creative problem solving that goes through it. And when I talk about creative problem solving, it's not just about having like a marketable product per se. It's, here's an advertising campaign, all right? At the beginning of the semester, you've got $1 million to deal with. The week before the final, that budget got slashed. You got 350, now what are you gonna do?
Mm-hmm.
And the torches and pitchforks come out.
Right.
You know, they're like, you can't do that, that's not fair. And well,
it may not be fair, but it's an important lesson.
You were the vice president of education with TechStars, and that's about when our story started up.
Yep.
Tell us just very briefly a little bit about your time in that role.
Yeah. I mean, it was a great role, something that was really a big challenge, which is how do you bottle up something that we've been teaching from an accelerator standpoint, from a startup weekend standpoint, but fundamentally what that was a lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
You come to the accelerator, you learn by doing. You
right.
get, you know, these mentors, these sort of rockets strapped onto your business, and off you go.
Mm-hmm.
Startup weekend, you learn by immersing yourself in the practice of entrepreneurship. And so the biggest challenge there was figuring out, okay, well, how do we scale the distribution, scale the impact of what we're doing, but not degrade the quality too much of what you would get from a lived experience. So to me, that was always the tension of figuring out, okay, what lives in this place of reasonably high scale, but also reasonably good experience?
Mm.
And you think of, there's a million YouTube videos
right.
of teaching you how to do this, that, and the other around entrepreneurship. So super high scale, but the challenge there is a lot of it is not great quality because you don't learn it by doing. Mm-hmm. You learn it by passively watching. Mm-hmm. So one of the major thematic things that I was always paying attention to, and it was great working with you and Aaron to help really expand on this, was how do you take these concepts, bottle it up in such a way that then creates mm-hmm. An opportunity for the student to not just passively learn it, but actively go do.
Mm-hmm.
One of my life core values is learn, do, teach, learn.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the element of learn, then go do? And then think about, are there elements of teaching that you can really reinforce what you know by teaching it to somebody else?
Looking back over the course of your career and even leading up to it, how are you getting wiser?
Yeah.
How is this work changing you?
I try to make the distinction between, because when I originally thought about that question, I was like, for me, there's a distinction between learning and wisdom.
Mm.
And to me, wisdom is embodied, practiced learning. It's the experience element that coincides with learning and teaching. For me, the way that I try to get wiser is if you think about StrengthsFinder, my top strength is learner.
Mm.
I'm a Enneagram 5, which means I just soak up all this information, okay. and that's how I try to approach things. And knowledge for the sake of knowledge, though, has its limitations. What I like to do, again, with this learn, do, teach, learn, is I'll learn something, I'll go practice it, and see how it works for me. Then I'll figure out how can I teach it. And in that process of teaching, I learn more. And it combines in with wisdom. So the thing that I really pay attention to, and I'm blessed because I get to work with amazing entrepreneurs all the time, and an amazing program team with Hannah and August and Allie and the crew that we run our program with, is taking the things that I learn and working with entrepreneurs to tune that knowledge to their specific needs, the specific things they're trying to do. And in that, I also really value when people push back with really thoughtful questions. And the thoughtful questions force me to reintegrate the knowledge, to apply it into their world in such a way that I can adapt what I know and what I've experienced into the specifics of what they're doing. And in that adaptation, I find that helps me foster wisdom in what I know, what I experience, and then ultimately, what can I help others do? And it's been a humbling experience with the toolkit. I was recently, just this weekend, talking to someone who had been in Kenya teaching farmers how to start their own businesses. And he was like, yeah, it was great. I was using the toolkit and showing them this, that, and the other. And that was the augmentation. So the toolkit provides the base knowledge, and then he came in and added kind of the layer on top of that of specifics and just his own wisdom of working with hundreds of entrepreneurs in that region. And it's been just, like I said, really humbling, all the stories that come inbound to me of people who's like, oh, I saw the toolkit here, or I was using it for this. So what we really tried to do is make it useful for individual entrepreneurs to watch, but also enable mentors to augment what they know and kind of up the level of combination of their experience, but up the level of kind of base content that they can use while they're helping entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Zach, once again, great to see you. And you always have this brilliant way of speaking into our worlds and challenging us in the best way possible. So thank you for all the work that you're doing through Techstars and the Nature Conservancy.
Likewise, the work you've done, at Techstars, we fundamentally believe that entrepreneurs create a better world, and the work that you helped us do around the toolkit, I really believe is helping create a better world.
Well, we're happy to support it.
Cool.
Zach Neese, everyone, thank you.
Thanks.
That's Zach Neese, former Vice President of Education at Techstars. He's now the Managing Director of Techstars Sustainability Accelerator in partnership with the Nature Conservancy. You can learn more about the Entrepreneur's Toolkit Zach and I discussed by visiting toolkit.techstars.com and more about Zach's current work at techstars.com/sustainability-program. This episode has been produced by yours truly with music by Nagoth Music. From Burrow and Block, I'm Chris Izinga, and I thank you for listening to It Makes You Think.